coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation. It's your host, Doug Hagman.
And this is the Hagman Report for today. It is Monday, June 14th, 2021. Eric the Tech, happy Monday. Happy Monday, he said. You didn't hear it, but he said happy Monday to everyone out there. It's also Flag Day, okay, as well as President Trump's birthday, but it's also Flag Day. And folks, the Federalist has a piece on the flag. And It starts out like this. Unlike the New York Times staffer who told MSNBC it was disturbing to see dozens of American flags flying last weekend. I love seeing so many storefronts and houses decked out in flags in red, white, and blue bunting over Memorial Day. And the author, Ellie Reynolds, discusses the meaning, the history of Flag Day. Okay, so the title of the article on the Federalist is read this history of the American flag, then go put one in your yard. And I will tell you this. I proudly fly the American flag. I have no problems with that. I have no problems with the Gadsden flag. I've got no problems with Trump One. Okay. That's W-O-N. I'm sorry. Trump W-O-N One. But the meaning of Flag Day, look, it's special. Now, it's not idolatry I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about what the flag represents. Now, if you are like me, you know, you understand the history behind the flag. You understand the meaning to have a flag. And this is no trivial matter. Because what we're going to hear today, show you today, is why we must fly the American flag, why we must stand, first of all, understand what the American flag represents and stand for American exceptionalism and our nation. Because what you're going to learn today is America is under attack. The entire West is under attack. This is a global attack against freedoms, okay, a global attack. And I'll show you exactly the larger picture today. John Moore, Liberty Man's going to be joining me here shortly. But I'm going to tell you something, okay? It is important to understand where we stand in this fight. And I will say this. If you didn't already, okay, I don't know how many people out there watched Extinction Protocols. Like me, okay? I watched it in real time. I had to watch it in real time, all right? Wow. Oh, wow. And you know what, folks? If you haven't done so already, okay, it's not too late to get the video on demand. And this time, if you haven't signed up for it, sign up for it. And what will happen is you'll be able to fast forward, rewind, select the speaker, et cetera, et cetera. And that gives you access to all of the previous conferences. I'm telling you, this one was special. Daniel Holdings, well, everyone knocked it out of the park. Everyone. Daniel Holdings, I mentioned something I totally forgot about. The Gothard Tunnel ceremony. Do you remember that? June of 2016? Do you remember that? Oh, my goodness. I had totally forgotten about that. And I checked my notes because I do keep notes in chronological fashion. And I remember talking about that at the time. And showing the video of that. My goodness, you talk about satanic, symbolic satanic. But anyway, to kick off the globalist takeover of the planet, not just America. But what I'd like you to do, since this is Flag Day and I'm open with a flag, let's take a look at what the college students, the higher learned of Americans, okay, remember, this is the higher education of America, what they think of the American flag. This is a short video from Campus Reform. All right. Watch this and tell me again why maybe you should spend, I don't know, 40, 50, 60,000, 100,000 a year sending your child to an indoctrination camp known as the universities and colleges across America or elsewhere. I mean, they're nothing but indoctrination camps. All right. So let's take it. Watch this. This is disturbing.
Hi, I'm Ophelia Jacobson with Campus Reform. Today we're in the great state of Texas at the University of Texas, Dallas, talking with students about the American flag. With Flag Day coming up, we want to know, is the American flag a symbol of oppression or a symbol of freedom for college students? Let's find out. When you see an American flag, what is the first thing that comes to mind?
Well, America, our country, patriotism, and I guess recently a couple of negative connotations. Nationalism in a negative type of light, and maybe some exclusiveness and some selfishness?
A lot of things come to mind. First of all, war. Second of all, let me see. Well, we've also taken a bit of land from Native Americans. That's unfortunate, too. And a lot, and it's just really terrible that we've done all these things. And this flag kind of reminds me of that, of all the sins we've committed against others.
It's just a flag, so I don't have tons of, you know, thoughts.
A symbol of a place to be and not something to really love and cherish with your whole heart, because that leads to a lot of blindness, I think, in my opinion. It's there. It represents something. What exactly it represents, I'm still not sure of myself.
When you think of the American flag, what is the first thing that comes to mind?
Freedom. It's a representation of our values and what we are as a country.
Some students have told me that they think the American flag is a symbol of oppression, genocide, and racism. Would you agree with that?
Yes, wholeheartedly. We've done so much under that banner. And we've just, and you know, the whole patriotism thing just sweeps all that narrative of racism, oppression, and the like under the rug.
I mean, I could see why certain people would think that, like, why certain people would see it as a, like, potentially representing that.
I see that point. I understand why you would think that.
I guess to some people it may invoke that emotion, and I understand that.
I guess I don't look at it positively. Like, I do look at it negatively. Again, I don't agree.
You're not going to look at it at all. Just go ahead and bend over.
There was a New York Times reporter who on TV said that she was disturbed after she saw a lot of American flags lined up across the street.
And this little dweeb.
Would you be disturbed if you saw a lot of American flags in one place?
With a bun in the back.
Absolute love of the American flag, I think, is very obviously correlated to, like, extremism in terms of, like,
I'm going to drag him by his bun and take him to my uncle's grave in Arlington.
I've definitely seen the American flag used as a racist symbol. You see people show up to, like, Trump rallies with their flags, waving it, screaming in people's faces. Well, then, yes, that it makes it obvious what it means to them.
Okay, yeah, I would very much see your point, you know, because, again, a lot of
this dribble goes on and on and on, but that represents I can't take it anymore. That represents the this not all, but a great majority of this college age, college indoctrinated, spoiled beyond belief. You know, their thumbs are pretty well exercised because of the video games. You know, this crap that they have been taught, they have been told, the history that has been revised, which brings me to one more point. It also goes to the taking down or the erasing of history, of American history, by taking down statues. And the left and the people in charge and power, they're okay with that, erasing our history. Good, bad, whatever, it's our history. Leave it alone. Do not rewrite it. Don't erase it. Don't try to erase it. Okay, so so today is Flag Day. And again, go to the Federalist. The link will be in the program description box. Read what it's all about. Read the history behind it. And I hope people are flying the American flags. I really do. All right, with me is John Moore, the Liberty Man. Oh, before I bring John on, I want to thank everyone for purchasing In the Dark of Night, my latest book, my latest work. And thank you also for leaving an honest comment at Amazon. Appreciate everyone who has done that. It gives you some insight into what, well, into an investigation that happened that I conducted some time ago. And this really, it's kind of like not done. That book, it does provide a conclusion, all right, but there's more to the story, and one last part is going to be released, or I shouldn't say, well, one additional part is going to be released to tie up any loose ends that anyone might think there are. But this book represents spirit cooking, Pizzagate, SRA, even before it became known in those terms, all right? And it's, by the way, those terms, especially Pizzagate, has been so misrepresented. But the fact of the matter is, it's, I'm very proud of this work, In the Dark of Night. There are so many people who really helped me with this. I want to thank everyone who did. But, In the Dark of Night, Blood of the Innocent at Amazon.com. And again, if you did get it, read it, leave an honest review at, Amazon, rate it as well at Amazon, or you can go to HagmanStore.com and get it. And, if you order through HagmanStore.com, I'll send you a signed copy inscribed with whatever you want. Just be very specific in the notes section at checkout. Be very specific. Okay. So with that, John Moore, thelibertyman.com, who is a legend, in the talk show industry, a legend. He's actually doing talk shows before, or when I was in diapers. No, he's not that old. I'm just kidding, of course. But, thelibertyman.com, that's his website, folks. It's in the program description box. The link is there. He's got a lot of news on his website. You can listen to him every day of the week, Monday through Friday, that is. Every weekday, I should say, right there on RBN. Click the link to listen to the latest show or drill down for the archives. All right. And then scroll down. Scroll down on the website. And you'll find news, whether it is current events. All sorts of news. And it's categorized there as well. And he's also got a great line of, products at, just go shopping and support John Moore at thelibertyman.com. John, how are you, sir?
Well, if I felt any better, it wouldn't be legal, Doug.
I know. Every week, I'm telling you, you always feel good, and I'm glad. It's good to have you. It's good to have you. So.
I need to move into the center of the camera here, don't I?
Well, that's what Eric keeps telling me.
That's a little better right there. Okay.
I keep scooching off camera. And he says, what are you doing? Yeah, so go ahead.
Well, Doug, we got each successive week as we get together on Mondays is more strange and more bizarre than a week before now. For the benefit of listeners who may not know, there's such a thing as a job title called corporate recruiters. Now, a corporate recruiter could be in-house to recruit new employees for the corporation, or they could be an outside vendor to find new employees for the corporation. There's a video being circulated right now from a corporate recruiter, outside vendor, who works for the oil and gas industry. And here's what she's saying. She says her clients in the oil and gas industry are providing her with names of people and their job descriptions that need to be replaced. They're telling her that all these employees have had the COVID shot, and the corporations expect that within 3 years, all these people will be either dead or disabled. Now, knowing what I know, Doug, about corporate America, this woman is not alone. This is happening all over the United States as we speak. Corporations seeking to have replacements for all the workers, which could be as much as 50% of their workforce, which would be devastating, of course, to any corporation, disabled or dead in 2 to 3 years. Now, in addition, as if that's not alarming enough, the commercial airlines are are already preparing. They haven't done it yet. They're preparing to warn people with COVID shots to not fly. And why is that? Because of the concern of getting blood clots at high altitudes. I think they're very close to making that decision, Doug, that they will decide to formally encourage people to not fly. They've had the COVID vaccine. Of course, I'm concerned about pilots, co-pilots, and flight attendants having had the COVID vaccine also. And of course, the next step would be to ban people from commercial flights that have had the COVID vaccine. Both of these are...
Have to say, you know, you mentioned pilots and co-pilots and the airline staff. I think the most frightening words you can hear at 37,000 feet are... over the intercom would be, do we have any pilots on board? You know,
right.
Yeah. Not good. You're right. Go ahead.
Absolutely. Well, if that happens, and at the moment it's a big if the airlines have a formal warning to passengers to not fly if they've had the COVID shot, that will be a game changer if it happens. It hasn't happened yet. And of course, there's going to be an immediate conflict. We have countries in Europe that won't allow you to fly unless you've had the COVID shot. And I don't know what the policies are of these major airlines about, their pilots, co-pilots, and their flight attendants getting or not getting the COVID shot. I suspect they've probably mandated it. That would be my expectation since most of corporate America has done that, Doug. But we can return to that issue. There's another thing that's come up. There's a, I don't know if you know Cliff High. I know Cliff.
Yes.
He knows my work. We have not corresponded, but he's written about my work in some of his articles. Cliff High now joins Mike Lindell, Sidney Powell, and Steve Bannon, people that you and I know and trust, saying that sometime in the next 6 months, maybe as soon as 3 to 4 months, Joe Biden will no longer be in the Oval Office. And he's not prognosticating that Donald Trump will be in there, but Donald Trump is the most likely person to be there, especially since Cliff High says that the flag rank officers in the U.S. military know that Donald Trump won the election. So this list of men and one woman, Cliff High, Mike Lindell, Sidney Powell, and Steve Bannon, men and a woman that we know, we trust. These are not people given to flippant statements. They're not joking around. These are intelligent people that are respected within the alternative media making these statements, Doug. Now, there's another reason why I think this could happen. Now, Doug, we have these blue cities and blue states. What would be the best way to have the maximum chaos in California, Illinois, New York, Massachusetts, and so forth? One of the best ways would be to have Joe Biden removed from office and Donald Trump placed in office, which is why I think if it's put before the Supreme Court, I don't know the exact numbers, but we have 4 or 5 justices who will always vote the way the Constitution and their oath of office tells them to. And we got 4 or 5 justices who will do what they're told to do because they're controlled. So if Sidney Powell files a case before the Supreme Court, they have original jurisdiction, by the way. It doesn't have to go through any federal magistrate or court first. To providing the evidence that in Arizona, Pennsylvania, Georgia and so forth, the election was stolen. The court will have to hear it. They'll have to hear it under very expeditious circumstances because of the nature of the case. And when Mike Lindell said a 9-0 ruling in favor of Sidney Powell's case, it didn't make sense to me at first. But if you realize that the communists also want maximum chaos, the people that control Justice Roberts, for example, we have beliefs on what that control is. They too will vote in favor of it, resulting in nationwide chaos in the blue cities and the blue states, Doug, getting exactly what they want.
Okay, so look, I completely understand what you're saying, and I've thought about this in depth. Is it possible Look, I number one, I believe as you do. I believe that there was massive fraud in 2020. I believe that they're in the process of getting caught, or they got caught, depending on who you listen to. The Maricopa County audit is a big friggin' deal. Sorry about the expletive there, but really not. It's a big deal. 16 states sent delegations down to Maricopa County to look at what they're doing. The audit process in Maricopa is above reproach. They've got three observers, none, and sitting at a table. And if you watch on the, you've seen this, and you watch on the audit, it's like a Lazy Susan kind of thing that spins around. One ballot, three observers. The observers seated at the table. They're not allowed to talk to one another. They record, what they see. And the process is stopped at 50 or halted, paused at 50. The results are compared. And if they match all three, fine. Okay. And they're put back in the box and, sent away. Now, it's my understanding that audit is going to be, when I say if they match, if all three of them match, that is, with their observations. So,
well, Doug, first of all, I would not use the word what the 16 states sent people to watch. I would use the terminology the 16 states sent people to be trained.
Okay.
In how to duplicate what's being done in Arizona.
Yep.
They're there to be trained.
True.
To duplicate that effort in their 16 states. What do you think?
No, I think it's 100% accurate what you just said. Plus, we have stuff going on in Fulton County, Georgia. Okay, we had Ruby Freeman and her supervisor daughter subpoenaed and told to bring all of the communications from January 2020 through 2021 with them. I'm telling you, man, so things are happening. But back to your larger point, because you're not going to hear a lot about this on the news, so fine. We have things happening behind the scenes. So, yes, you're right. Let's just say we find, beyond a shadow of a doubt, the only people that won't report on this is the mainstream media, that President Trump won the 2020 election, handily won it. And fraud exists all across the nation, especially in the battleground states. Okay. Now, that's the scenario. Okay. And I don't know if was there a precedent for this on the presidential scale? I don't think so. So you're right. Let's say it goes to the Supreme Court and they say, yeah, okay, put him back in. What you said, and I want everyone to think about this. Are we being played?
Doug, the people behind this are clever enough to have planned the scenario I outlined from the beginning. The scenario I outlined is not necessarily something that's spontaneous and happening as a result of the chronology of what's taken place. People behind us may be satanic, they may be communist, but they're not stupid. They're brilliant men and women, absolutely brilliant with high IQs, and they understand human nature. And it's very possible that the entire thing from the creation of Wuhan flu to President Trump going back into office was orchestrated to happen just the way it's happening, Doug. That's very possible, and it would be foolish to discount that as a possibility. Knowing human nature, knowing our infrastructure, the Chinese have studied us in great detail for decades. They know our system better than most Americans know it. They know our people better than most Americans know our own people. They know how our system works. They know damn well who Sidney Powell is and how brilliant this woman is. They know make up the Supreme Court, who's going to vote which way for what reason.
All right.
And it's very possible that from the moment we first started seeing Chinese people falling over face down and bleeding out in Wuhan to President Trump being put back in office, everything was orchestrated in advance. We can't discount that. Regardless,
right.
I think there's a strong argument to be made that the program I outlined has a very high chance of becoming reality.
Yeah, I do too, and I think okay about what you just said. I think that the globalist power structure. I think that they, if I can say this, if they didn't plan every aspect of this, they certainly planned the major points and exploited the things, expanded as things evolved. Expanded and you know capitalized on the evolution of events.
Of course,
you know, yeah,
of course.
So okay.
Well, we've seen one of the major examples in recent times was the alleged, and I do say alleged, spontaneous collapse of the East European communist countries, the alleged spontaneous collapse of the Soviet Union becoming Russia. It was all planned decades in advance. Now, what happened beginning 1989, 1990 was orchestrated and planned. It didn't work out precisely like they hoped it would,
right. But
pretty close. But pretty close. Ceausescu in Romania, for example, he didn't get the memo. And he was the only East European communist leader who was assassinated during the coups. The rest of these coups in Czechoslovakia, Hungary, and so forth, they were quiet, bloodless coups for the most part. And some of these countries didn't really. Now, the Czech Republic, for example, I think there's a high level of literacy and educated people in the Czech Republic. And I think the majority of the educated adults there, which is the majority, by the way, as opposed to our country, they know that the collapse of Czechoslovakia, the communism country, was not spontaneous. And they're doing everything they can to make sure they never go back to communism. The same thing with some of those other. It's kind of ironic, Doug, that the former East European communist countries are, for the most part, the most resistant to the Muslim invasion. And I do find that rather ironic, but it is a good thing that they're doing that, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, and the pastor of the Canadian church is speaking out and saying, look, I escaped Poland, went to Canada, and he talked about his family history. And he talked about the events that preceded his arrest. Arthur Pulaski, I believe his name is.
Right.
That. Okay. I may have really butchered that, but if so, I apologize. But he talked about the process, the systematic intimidation. It was not just that one time or the two times. It was over a period of like 15 months that he was harassed and hassled on various things like being against transgenderism, abortion, or feeding the poor even. Okay, so what we saw was the final, just the arrest, or, you know, the arrest of him and leading up to the arrest. So you're correct when you say the other countries, they know. And this pastor is out there warning everybody, saying, look, whether it's Canada or the United States, it's here. It is here. And it's worse than it was, as you stated, in those countries.
Right. Well, one of the goals of totalitarianism is to make fear so widespread, so prevalent, that people will self-censor and not do things that would be done in a free republic. And we're already seeing that. People, they're fearful of being politically active because it could affect their employment. Self-censorship.
And again, I don't mean to overtalk you, but they we're seeing self-censorship, and that's something, you know, John, look, I believe self-censorship, in my view, is a eunuch's way out of things, or a eunuch's path to take. If you don't have any cojones, then quite simply, you shouldn't be behind a microphone. Again, I walked away from nearly a quarter million subscribers on YouTube because I was told, look, you say this, we're going to take you off. We're going to wipe you out, your whole channel. I said, up yours. I'm not, you know, you're not going to tell me what to say. So If I see this happening, I see people self-censoring on YouTube and on Twitter. What the hell are you still doing on YouTube and Twitter? Get off of it. Get off of those communist platforms.
Absolutely. Well, I left YouTube. I was tired of being censored, and I don't need that. And so I'm off YouTube, and that's fine. We use Rumble now, and I understand Rumble may be going public and change their guidelines, but if they do, I'll leave Rumble too.
Absolutely.
You know, go with Brighteon or some of these other platforms. But no, I'm not gonna be quieted. That's not gonna happen. I've paid a big price over the years for speaking up, but
you
it's
have.
Okay.
You have. Look, folks, the Liberty Man, I'll calm down. TheLibertyMan.com. John Moore is a man's man. All right. He's a man's man. And he's not going to be muffled, muzzled, censored. He's not going to self-censor any more than I am. And I'm glad. I'm glad because we need more people like that. We don't need people tiptoeing, you know, around these social things. Oh, you know, I can't say vaccine or whatever, you know, so I just avoid that or, you know, cleverly disguise it or try to. If you can't speak freely, you're not an American citizen. Or if you can't speak freely in America, America is not America. We have to change it. I am really riled up today, man.
I can tell.
Too much coffee, but yes, go ahead. Continue on. You're exactly right. So, okay, but walk me through this, because what would this look like? All right, so the states decertify. They say, hey, boy, did we screw up, or whatever the scenario might
okay,
be.
Okay.
Then what?
Well, my presumption will be Sidney Powell will be the lead attorney, which would be dozens of highly qualified, excellent attorneys. To do the lawsuit, Sydney would need certification from the authorities doing these audits, certification backed up by sworn testimony that what they did was proper and verifiable and will stand up to scrutiny. And she will take those certifications from all those states and incorporate that into a lawsuit before the Supreme Court on behalf of Donald Trump, of course, challenging the outcome of the election based on the certifications of these audits from these different states. And I presume the Democratic Central Committee would be defending what happened. I don't know that for a fact, but I would think that they would be the people defending it. It may be the... I'm thinking out loud here. The House of Representatives may be the defendant because the certification came from the vice president as president of the House of Representatives, I believe. Is that accurate, Doug? I believe that's how it works.
I'm going to give that a conditional yay, okay, or aye. I believe that that's the way it is. I think so.
Well, in a lawsuit, you have to challenge somebody, and somebody has to be defended. And the vice president issued the certification in front of a joint session of Congress. So my presumption would be that that would be the defending party, would be the vice president. But it may be another entity. It might be two or three entities.
Let me remind you, okay, because we're not talking just about the presidency. We're talking about the down ballot votes. Right now, Mitch McConnell could be the majority leader for the, you know what
I mean? That's true also. Getting back to the lawsuit, each state has to individually certify their votes and electoral votes going to the vice president. So that would be, each one of those states would be another possible defendant as well. So anyway, regardless of the details of that, the lawsuit will be filed. The evidence will be presented to the Supreme Court, and the evidence will be, the term we use, Doug, is clear and convincing evidence.
Right.
And it will be clear and convincing, and it will stand up to scrutiny, and it will be backed up by all the audits being done in a proper manner that's verifiable and documentable, and will stand up to scrutiny. It will be, it will be irresistible. The evidence will be irresistible, and there won't be any way to refute it. They may use emotional arguments like we don't like it, or something like that.
Yeah, I don't like a lot of things, but go ahead.
Yeah, but that's not evidence.
Yeah,
that's emotion.
Yeah, and I don't. I just, as an aside, if I hear another person say. Start off with the conversation with, I feel like I'm going to, okay. So, but let's go on the bigger picture. Okay. So that happened. Let's say that happens and the Supreme Court says, okay. Or what it, you know, whatever happens. Okay. Okay. Yeah. You're right, Sydney. You're right. The whoever.
Well, they'll issue an order.
Okay.
Supreme Court will issue an order.
To who?
To the vice president. Who is Kamala Harris, I assume, at the moment.
I don't know.
Vice President Kamala Harris, Heels Up Harris, to change the outcome of the election to have President Trump be the winner. I think that's the way that would go down.
She would actually gag. Not for the first time, but she would gag.
She can't ignore. Well, I guess she could attempt to, but she can't ignore an order from the Supreme Court. Now, another thing that I don't know if you saw the interview with Cliff High the man who interviewed him, but Cliff High also said that all our flag rank officers are very aware that President Trump won the election.
Right. I didn't see the interview, but I heard it. I heard about it. Go ahead. Continue, please.
I don't want to see active duty military taking over the Congress, but if it comes down to it, if that's what it takes, that's what it takes. And I can't imagine our military wanting to maintain power. My belief, based on my knowledge of experience working with officers of the U.S. military, their goal would be to restore a proper constitutional government as soon as possible within days.
Okay. So, all right. Then let me ask you this, because in the Daily Signal, an article by Victor Davis Hanson, who I have a lot of respect for. I've interviewed him before, and he's a no-nonsense guy. He doesn't put up with anything, and he's very factual, kind of like John Moore, kind of like you, okay?
Just thank you.
All right. All right. You know Victor Davis Hanson, right?
I know very well. He's a great guy.
All right. Every time I see him interviewed, I think of you. Okay. So here, he wrote this in the Daily Signal because this is relevant to what you just said. The title of the article, Revolution of the Woke, isn't your father's left-wing revolution. Okay. Very, very cute. And there's the article on your screen. Okay. And he gets into this, you know, starry-eyed radicals in the 60s and 70s, they dreamed that they were either going to take over America or destroy it. And you remember the 60s. And of course, he goes through the history of the 60s radicals. And the end of the draft in 72 that wound down the Vietnam War, which, of course, you served in, and thank you for that. The oil embargoes and, of course, the worsening economy, and so on. But he writes this, and this is what caught my attention. And of course, he writes that 60s protesters mainline divorce, abortion on demand, promiscuity, drug use, one-parent homes. By the late 70s and 80s, most veteran cultural revolutionaries had gotten married, were raising a family, bought a house, got a job, made money. Now, here's the key stuff. This time around, he writes, their offspring's left-wing assault is different and far more ominous. And I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I'll say this. I'll just cite this here. Name one mainline institution that the woke left does not now control and warp. The media, the campus, Silicon Valley, professional sports, and he goes on and on and on. But what caught my attention as you were talking about this is this sentence right here. They don't picket outside the Pentagon. They are inside the Pentagon. Okay. He's talking about radicals. He's talking about leftist radicals. They're inside the Pentagon. So does that change your, I don't know. Does that affect your, impact your statements or thoughts at all? I mean, the fact that they're inside the Pentagon, I believe they are. I believe that, you've got compromised individuals inside the Pentagon. I mean, we do.
There's no doubt about that. And we don't know how the numbers break down. The infiltration of Marxism into the Pentagon has been going on for many decades. And if within that group, there would be different levels of knowledge and beliefs. As far as willing participants in a communist coup, I think that number is relatively small. As far as men and women who have adopted socialist beliefs, not knowing that they're actually Marxist theology, is another big group of people. And another group would be those who go along with the socialist Marxist theology, not giving a damn about it one way or the other, but because it's career enhancing to do so, while in their heart of hearts they're still patriots. So there's going to be different groups within that bunch, Doug, of beliefs and values and loyalties. Hopefully the flag rank officers that need to be patriotic for the right reasons will be patriotic for the right reasons and have the ability to exercise authority if the time comes where they need to do that. I hope that they will.
All right. And you mentioned the military being, you know, a possibility. And of course you said, it wouldn't be the, hopefully it won't come to that. What about the Department of Justice? Well, you see Department of Justice, Merrick Garland in control, kind of like a, was it?
That man does not look healthy. That man does not look healthy at all.
Well, yeah, he's decomposing as we speak. But okay. So now again, walk me through this. Okay. Your best guess, thoughts, speculation, whatever. So let's say, because you mentioned blue states, red states now and chaos and, you know, stuff. So, let's say decisions made. All right. Well, you know, so that's the that could be the process. What would happen to the people? Because we are so divided. We can't agree on, you know, what size, or we can't agree on the, you know, whether we use 85% fat in our hamburger or 95%. Oh, that's right. We won't have them. Anyway, we can't agree on anything, it seems like. So what would happen? What kind of chaos are we looking at? And I know it's speculation.
What kind of what are we looking at?
Doug? Chaos. What type of?
Well,
I mean, we're going to see, like, you know,
given the gravity of the situation, you know, we had a drug addict kill himself with fentanyl a year ago. George Floyd, he killed himself with an overdose, and look what happened as a consequence of that. Well, it was a tragedy for him. And a tragedy for the country because of the response. But that response was resulted in millions of dollars of damage, and I'm not sure how many lives were lost, but some. Well, fast forward 1 year. That incident of George Floyd killing himself with a fentanyl overdose is a very small matter compared to something that hasn't happened in over 200 years with our republic. A president being removed from office and the man who he ran against being installed in that same office, that will set off a level of violence unprecedented. I think exceeding what happened last year, exceeding what happened in 1968, exceeding anything. The worst riots in this country were the anti-draft riots in the North during the Civil War. The biggest loss of life of any riots in this country. We may very well exceed those numbers, Doug. Everything's on the table. And it'll get as bad as the powers that be want it to be. The powers that be have recruited Antifa, Black Lives Matter. They've recruited them, trained them, and equipped them. Now, our mutual friend Sam Andrews has debriefed some of these Antifa people. And in those conversations, they told Sam how they were trained to fabricate incendiary devices, Molotov cocktails in particular. So they could throw them on those flat roofs. These commercial buildings in Ferguson, Missouri had flat roofs covered with tar paper, which of course is highly flammable. And, they did that in the manner in which they were trained to do it. You know, what happened in Ferguson?
We can't look for every. Here's what I'm saying. Okay, you want to? They want to start something. The left wants to start. And this is just my my personal opinion. All right. If the left wants to start something, giddy up. Okay, because I'm ready. All right. I hope it doesn't come to that because I really don't want to. I like my lifestyle. I mean, it's not much, but it's mine, right? So, you know, I just don't want to see that happen. But if they start something, oh boy, right? So, but is that playing into their hands?
Well, these people are clever, and they will give us no choice but to do what we have to do to restore the republic, and to, in the case of the violence that it comes at us, to preserve innocent lives and property. We will do those things. Now, a year ago, Doug, Antifa sent busloads of protesters to several communities in my neighborhood. The local sheriffs all found out in advance. The local sheriffs activated the local militia. And, for example, Eminence, Missouri, a town of maybe 300 or 400 people. The sheriff's department, maybe 12 men and women, on a good day. And the sheriff had activated the local militia. There was 300 armed men and women waiting for Antifa. When they got there, they turned around and left without getting off the bus.
Right.
Yeah, I'm using it as one example.
Right.
So these communities will come together to protect themselves and take care of each other. In the blue cities, it's a different matter. We have communist mayors, communist prosecuting attorneys. My hometown, St. Louis, Missouri, is a good example, where the communist prosecuting attorney, what they call a district attorney in St. Louis, has been refusing to prosecute these protesters. And they all know it. So it'll be a wild ride for the blue cities, especially blue cities inside a blue state. Now, in Missouri, in my home state, we got two or three blue cities, but we have very red, Ferrari red state.
Right.
and a former sheriff who's the governor. And he's not going to tolerate that stuff. He's simply not going to do it. And if the district attorney and the mayor and the chief of police in St. Louis won't act, well, he will. And he'll do whatever is necessary to preserve innocent lives and property. And if it means sending in the state troopers, he'll do it. Activating National Guard, he'll do it. And he'll do it in a heartbeat. But in the red states, the blue states, where they have blue cities, all bets are off.
Yeah.
It will be maximum chaos, maximum destruction of property, and a lot of loss of life. And that's what they want.
Exactly.
That's their goal. And they will achieve their goal, Doug.
So I agree with you on that. And folks, if you think I'm pining for, you know, this mass chaos, I mean, think about the supply disruptions. Think about the outages. Think about the it'll be inconvenient. Okay, now that's not to say that I like my convenience more than I like liberty. No. I'm not saying that. I'm saying understand, go in this with your eyes wide open and understand that your life will forever be changed. But it's already forever changed. We've lost our liberties. We've lost everything this country once stood for. And you know what, John, if I can cut to this, okay. By the way, we do have to take a top of the hour break, about 12 minutes, but I'm going to show you something here. Where was this? This is on the global level. Right? What we're looking at. Is this not on the global, level? Excuse me.
Absolutely it is.
All right. Take a look at this. Let me just, grab this up here. I don't know. I had this up and again, I've got to go to, paper, from now on. But, number four, Eric, exactly. This is number clip four. This is, about the Great Reset, because this is what we're fighting against. I mean, we're looking at this. I've actually got two clips. This is one of the two, but go ahead and play that one. Oh, hang on. He's saying, boy, you know, why don't you go 1, 2, 3 instead of 4? Okay. You ready? Hello? Here it comes. Here it comes.
These people are already rewriting history to suit themselves. They're poisoning our children's minds with harmful and damaging concepts about race and gender fluidity in schools. They're now insisting we submit to a global medical experiment, even while they've demonstrated they're making little more than educated guesses as to why. For decades, these totalitarians have been taking baby steps towards their final goal, but now they're sprinting towards the finishing line, sensing that victory is near at hand.
What John said.
So it's now up to us to put a stop to this madness. We can't rely on government, I should say, to do it for us, because government are actually a big part of the problem. We need less of them, and we need more of us.
The 35,000-foot view right now on why the globalists are doing this and how they can be stopped. You know, I'm really impressed with the Sky TV host out of Australia, Corey Bernardi, and some of the others. They're getting right up there at Tucker Carlson level with their analysis of what's really going on. And this is just a short clip of him talking about how now they're saying if you've had the so-called COVID vaccine, it's a gene therapy, unapproved. It was done by emergency authorization. Just remember that. That if you've taken it, don't fly for several weeks. Now,
gee,
we pointed this out.
Where did we hear that? John?
Months ago. I mean, they have heavily studied what they're injecting people with. You know, wait a minute. You just said 60 seconds ago that this was emergency approved, unstudied. It's not been studied by the regular FDA protocols that aren't perfect but are still extensive. And you still have problem vaccines and tainted vaccines and side effects they try to cover up, but that's come out. That's a walk in the park compared to what's going on now. This is heavily tested gene therapy by Fauci at the University of Texas and literally hundreds of other universities. They've been obsessed with the proteins in corona and SARS viruses for 20 years, and Fauci's funded hundreds of studies. And they know that if you give somebody this, it causes autoimmune problems, allergic reactions, and holes in your lungs, holes in your heart, holes in your brain. When your brain starts bleeding, they call that a stroke. So they heavily studied it. That's what's so incredible is I've looked at, no exaggeration, hundreds of studies. I've read more than 50 of them, but it's always the same study over and over again. I've scanned them. I've shown you a bunch of them here on air. And that's what's crazy about this is you're reading where they go, do not give this to humans. It killed most of the rats. Do not give this to humans. It killed all of the ferrets. Do not give this to, and you're just, and it's like, that's what all the top scientists last year said. Don't do it. It will cause blood clots. It will hurt you. And it'll grow this stuff in your body forever.
Can you pause that just for a second?
And each subsequent
just hit pause. Keep that on. Okay, John, he's talking about the jab now. This is part of the larger, again, the 35,000-foot view. But you said about this is all part of it. This is not straying from the topic of our elections or chaos. This is what one segment of it, right? I mean, this.
It is.
Okay. All right. And it was planned for decades, as he said, as you said. And you know what? I wonder how many people have heard, well, you shouldn't fly. And maybe you shouldn't fly if you got the jab because of, you know, blood clots.
All right. Well, yeah. Back up a bit. They're saying what Alex quoted was, "Don't fly for a few weeks."
Right.
You know, we don't know
That's right.
I mean, I know doctors. I have friends that are doctors, different types of medical and chiropractors and dentists. They just pick a number out of the air. No patients been vaccinated allowed in the office for 4 weeks. No patients allowed in for 6 weeks. Now, they're just guessing because we really don't know how long they'll be transmitting the spike protein. And the airlines don't know for what period of time people with a COVID shot are going to get blood clots and die. It's just pure guesswork.
And you're exactly right. And I apologize for the scrambled screen there, but you're exactly right. Correct. But
the only scientific basis for what they're doing is looking at what's happened with other things injected in the human beings. The person's natural immune system will attack what's been injected, and they hope the belief, which supported by very little evidence, by the way, the belief is that over a period of time, maybe 4 weeks or 6 or 8 weeks, that the body will compromise the injection, the shot, the COVID shot, and people will no longer get the blood clots. But that's completely unknown. It's just guesswork, Doug.
You're exactly right. Now, again, with your permission, I cut that off there. We have a John Bowen report that'll take us to the top of the hour, and we can comment after that. John Bowen did a video titled Mass Extinction, which, again, goes with what you said and is part of this larger 35,000-foot view. Okay, so we got political chaos over here. We've got people dying, and I should mention this. I saw these stats, and this is from the VAERS website. June 11th, 2021, as of that date, VAERS lists 5,888 deaths among 329,021 cases of injuries following the jabs. And there are also another 5,884 life-threatening cases, 43,892 ER visits, and 4,583 permanent disabilities, and 19,597 hospitalizations after the jab. There you go, right? So if you don't mind, this is kind of a continuation of what you said that combines the political with the scamdemic. Go ahead.
G7 was the predictable embarrassment only a Joe Biden could deliver.
I'm going to communicate that there are consequences for violating the sovereignty of democracies.
Complete with moments of raging dementia.
As a health and safety. I'm ably supported by your Royal Highnesses, I think.
I didn't think this was going to work.
Two hats.
There is a knife. What? There is a knife, if you want.
I know there is.
Something that is more unusual.
That's slicing strange.
This is all the Lord Lieutenant's idea.
Replete with cringeworthy pandemic theatrics from the finest crop of globalist twits in human history. And what did the meeting of social engineers accomplish? Biden and his UK partner in crime, Boris Johnson, have decided to commit to a 15% global minimum tax amid talks of exemptions for China.
Well, this will affect all multinationals, whether they're U.S. multinationals, the German multinationals, Swiss multinationals. And so it really is all sectors around the world. This will cause countries to have to lift tax rates from where they are right now. There's a lot of tariffs being implemented from a penal perspective that maybe would get eliminated because digital services taxes, which are quite controversial, would go. That's part of this arrangement as well, part of the communique.
While G7 countries pledge to donate 1 billion vaccine doses globally by the end of 2022, because as the coronavirus continues to dissipate, it's vital that young people are poisoned at a record pace.
My name is Pamela Goodman, and my 32-year-old stepson, Benjamin, was killed by the Johnson & Johnson vaccine on March 14th, 2021. within 12 hours, he was dead of a cardiac arrest, sudden death.
COVID is, I know you all know, but a lot of people may not know what COVID is. That is a system whereby they're going to provide funding for states to be able to get access to vaccines.
First Lady Jill Biden, now openly assuming the foreign policy duties of the Executive Office of the United States, had to get a handle on an adrift Joe Biden aimlessly meandering the G7 grounds. While in a regular momentary lapse of coherence, President Biden disrespectfully loathed the thought of returning back to the country he claims to represent, where until recently a booming economy had just attained energy independence, only to have that squandered and delivered back to the globalists and flushed down the Bidenomics toilet.
John, every time I see Boris Johnson, I think of Chris Farley. I just want to tell you that, okay? Whatever. And folks, in the program description box, I'm not going to drag this on. This Great Reset, it's about mass extermination of the population. John, isn't that what this is all about? The whole thing, including the chaos you talked about? Potential
it
chaos?
Is. It is. There's multiple agendas. But the person we've talked about that has, I believe, some of the highest credibility in this area of expertise is Dr. Mike Yeadon, former vice president of Pfizer, former head of research at Pfizer, saying that the COVID vaccines are a depopulation effort. You're not going to find, there might be half a dozen men with credentials equal to this man's when it comes to the matter of vaccines and viruses. And that's what the man says. So I think we can take that to the bank. And as a truthful, scientifically solid evaluation by somebody well qualified to do so, and there are several others equally qualified, the Frenchman who got the Nobel Prize in virology, Dr. Vandenbosch, and a few others of equal stature, saying that the COVID shots are poison, that they're going to depopulate the planet. And that is the plan, as we've noted for and wondered about for several years, as per the Georgia Guidestones, as per the Deagle Report, which I understand is pulled off the internet after being there for a number of years. I'm surprised it made it on the internet at all, but it did. And
no one read it, right? I mean, yeah. Go ahead.
So we're at the beginning of the decades-long plans being carried out. That's what's happening. This is a culmination of decades of planning to depopulate the planet, to put the communists in charge of the planet, to change the way business is done worldwide with the people that are left. And it's going to be a wild ride, Doug. Going back to what I said earlier, we've got people of stature that within the alternative media, of course, Cliff High is not known to the mainstream media, but Mike Lindell, Sidney Powell, and Steve Bannon are well known in the mass media, in the mainstream media. Cliff High, not so much so, if at all. But when men and women,
he's a brilliant guy.
He's absolutely brilliant. And when men and women of that stature make these statements, first of all, these men and women, they don't get their news from the Wall Street Journal or, mainstream TV or watching, anybody like you and I or anybody on Fox News. They get it from the people who make the news. That's where they get their news from.
Right.
The people who make the news, the insiders. That's why I look for sources like that, Doug, well-connected people who, on a first name basis with the real movers and shakers that have access to information you and I don't have access to. And I've learned that as a intelligence analyst in military intelligence to look at things like the fall of 1967, the coffin makers and throughout the villages were building stacks and stacks of coffins to give the Viet Cong peace of mind knowing that when they went into battle, there'd be a coffin waiting for them. Things like that at the highest levels in Saigon, they were not paying attention to. But I was paying attention to it because I knew that these very poor coffin makers, just scraping by, aren't going to build coffins unless there was a use for them. They weren't going to do that.
And your survival, at that point, your survival depended on intelligence, accurate intelligence.
It did.
Yeah.
It did, and I acted on it. I didn't have the maturity. If I was in the same situation now, I was only 20 years old. I got off the plane in Vietnam. I'd been in the state track meet 15 months before, so the state high school track meet 15 months before I got to Vietnam.
A rude awakening for, folks think about that today. It just, and John, you can play along with this if you like, but imagine what you saw in Campus Reform video. Imagine those, pardon me, but dimwits, being sent to battle.
Well, they weren't all dimwits, and the reporter was asking leading questions to get the result that she was looking for. Well, 7 out of 10 Americans age-wise eligible to go in the military or can't go into the military, and that's unprecedented. We've never had. Since 240 something years of our republic, the 7 out of 10 young Americans, too fat, too dumb, too drugged up, are with criminal records that they could not enter any branch of the U.S. military. It's never been that way before, Doug, and that's where we are. And that's a different topic, but it's worth discussing. These are low standards.
Yeah.
That they can't pass. These are not the standards when I was in the military in 1967. The standards then were higher than they are now. If we had the same standards as when I went in 1967, it may be 2 out of 10 instead of 3 out of 10 eligible to. And that's our future, Doug. The future of this country is in the hands of men and women who are too fat, too dumb, too drugged up, and have criminal records. That's the future of our country. 7 out of 10 Americans.
That's sad.
And when you're 18 to 25 years old, you should be at the peak of your physical abilities.
And
most likely they are, unfortunately.
I just have to say this. I don't know where this fits in, but I know somebody, a young man, who became ill with the SARS-CoV-2 virus. This is back in November. His testosterone today is at the level of an 80-year-old man. Okay, now the reason I say that is my question to you, I guess, could this, the release of the SARS-CoV-2, this Fauci experiment, could that be a desired effect?
Men and women both that have had the COVID shot are going to be sterile. That seems to be consensus among the scientists. There's no consensus about how the percentage of people that will die. There's no consensus about how soon they will die. Is it 6 months? Is it 2 years? There is consensus, however, that every man and woman of childbearing age will be sterile. That seems to be a consensus, Doug.
That's something. Folks, John Moore, the Liberty Man, since we blew right through the top of the hour break, let me do this, John. You're listening to John Moore on the Hagmann Report. That's John Moore, theLibertyMan.com. Folks, bookmark that website. Go there. Support John Moore through purchase of his products and support him any way you can. Tell others about his page and his show, which is on RBN Monday through Friday. It's on your screen. Okay, so that's thelibertyman.com. Folks, I want to tell you about this as well. I want to ask you a question, I guess. Not tell you about this. Well, I'm going to ask you and then tell you something. Because if you're like me, and if you're like the normal everyday American out there, you're gonna use credit cards to buy things, and maybe you might have 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 10 who knows how many credit cards you might have, but it's convenient. It makes life convenient to have credit cards. But soon, when you get your statements, you look and you think, oh my gosh, I'm paying like 20%, unbelievable interest rates. If you are tired, and I will ask you, are you tired of credit card bills with high interest rates? And I would suspect you are, if you're the average person. Are you ready to pay off, and this is the question I have, your credit card balances and start saving money? Well, I've got the solution for you. The very, very fine folks, and these are great people, at Lightstream.com. Lightstream.com. I'm going to tell you something. They have worked something out with the Hagman Report where you, this is a special deal for the Hagman Report. Folks, get a credit card consolidation loan from Lightstream. Rates start at just 5.59% APR with auto pay and excellent credit. It's much lower than the average credit card interest rate of over 19% APR. The rate's fixed, never going to go up over the course of the loan. And you get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000 with no fees. No application fees, no origination fees, no transaction fees, no prepayment penalties, no payment to me, no payment to Eric, no payment, no fees, that is. No application fees, all right? And they're very quick because sometimes you can get, you can even get your money in the bank account as soon as the same day you apply. Lightstream believes that people with good credit deserve a better loan experience, and that's exactly what they deliver. Now, here's how to get this special offer. Just for my listeners, apply now to get a special interest rate discount and save even more. The only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/Hagman. I'm going to spell it out for you because why? Because sometimes I have trouble with the English language and spelling myself. So it is LightStream.com/Hagman. That's lightstream.com/Hagman. Two N's on Hagman. You wouldn't know it by the way I sign my name. Hagman. H-A-G-M-A-N-N. That's lightstream.com/Hagman. This is subject to credit approval. Rates range from 5.95% APR to 19.99% APR and include a 0.50% auto pay discount. Lowest rate requires excellent credit. Terms and conditions apply and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/Hagman for more information. You will be glad you didn't thank me later. Folks, you're listening to the Hagman Report right here on the Global Star Radio Network. The man in the, well, in the captain's chair is John Moore riding shotgun with me. John Moore, thelibertyman.com, thelibertyman.com. And he's plugged in. John, you're plugged into all these people who know stuff. How come I can't get people to, oh, I do, but I'm, they know stuff.
It's a matter of training and experience. And you and I are both homicide detectives, and you and I both learned, decades ago that, men and women that do what we do are only as valuable as the context that they have.
You betcha.
And, I learned at a young age, when I was in the Army and military intelligence, the value of networking. I was in the CIA headquarters every day, five days a week when I was in Vietnam. I attended the secret briefing at the Tactical Operations Center 5 days a week. I was in, the headquarters for Army Security Agency and other, the Special Forces group that was, near where I was. And people in various administrative places. And I learned real quick that you want to get to know these people, get to know their names, and know a little bit about them, be friendly with them, hire them, get to know you. And, that stood me in good stead because, you know, when I needed something, I could make a phone call and say, "Hey, Billy Bob, you know, this is John. How you doing? I need some help getting, whatever it might be, XYZ. And Billy Bob said, "Well, sure, John, I'll take care of it and, I'll give you a call when it's ready." And that's the way the world works, Doug. It doesn't matter whether it's a military, General Motors, or out in the private sector doing what you and I did. And don't be afraid to call people. I developed relationships with various forensic pathologists, experts in various expertise to help me in homicide investigations, help me in civil investigations. And the same thing applies in life in general. We talk occasionally about my Triumph sports car. Well, I'll talk to one guy who knows a little bit about cars, and I'll say, "You know, who knows a little bit more about this than you?" And he'll refer me to the next person. By the third person, I'm talking to a person who does the original engineering on these things, whatever it might be. You know? And that's the way it works, networking. And if you learn how to network, you can achieve dramatic results in a relatively short period of time, Doug.
You know, you're exactly right. And folks, You can do the same thing. And just as John described, regardless of what the situation is. And there's always somebody that knows more than the person you're talking to. And I find too, if you say something like, you know, thanks for the information or thanks for this, is there someone else I could talk to maybe that specializes in X, Y, or Z, whatever you're talking about. And it works well as long as you keep that first relationship and subsequent relationships going strong. So very, very good. And you're right on this. I see a storm on the horizon. And John, I have to say that I don't think you're wrong in this. And just a subtle correction, a slight correction. I'm not sure if Steve Bannon actually said, you know, we're going to see President Trump back in the Oval Office. I think he was citing other people like Mike Lindell.
I won't challenge that.
Yeah,
I'm not going to challenge.
That's from what I heard personally. You know, however, I don't know what he's thinking privately, but I've got to suspect, given his coverage on the audits and given his excitement for, you know, hey, because we all know it was stolen. And so it comes back to two things, by the way. It comes back to November 3rd and even before November 3rd, the SARS-CoV-2 Wuhan Chinese Communist Party virus. And one last thing. If we have chaos here, will China – okay, you're familiar with the Civil War. Will China
– right.
We'll try to get involve themselves in one side, well, the blue side, I should say. If it's blue and red, we can refer to it that way, blue v. red. Will China support the blue financially or tactically? Can they? Would they?
The most likely state for that to happen is California for a number of reasons. California is looking to leave the union. California has the equivalent of a embassy in Beijing, already open and staffed.
Wait, what? They do?
They do. It's part of the exit strategy for California to leave the union. They do. California has multiple, the state of California and various officials have multiple business agreements with the People's Liberation Army, the Chinese government, which is one and the same, basically. So I think California is the most likely place. Oregon and Washington, maybe slightly less so, but, this is how bad it is in the state of Washington. My daughter's school district, which is a far suburb of Seattle, the president of the teachers union said the following. The parents of the students who want their children to go back to school is an example of white privilege. You can't make this stuff up, Doug. And that's just one very small example. Some of the extreme Northeast states are possibilities. We have a number of governors up there that seem to be, if not outright Marxist, they certainly have Marxist beliefs. And we don't know what's going on sub rosa. We really don't.
That's right.
The communists can do anything. They can keep a secret. So we don't know what's going on behind the scenes sub rosa. I believe we need to be on our toes. I know you know Jeff Nyquist. Jeff has made some very alarming statements on my show last week, and even more so with Mike Adams a day or two later, naming names and naming very detailed scenarios that he believes is going to go down. Not paying heed to Jeff Nyquist is foolish. During the Trump administration, I was telling my audience that Jeff Nyquist should have a workstation in the West Wing of the White House and to advise the president on matters involving international communism. And that's not a flippant statement on my part. That's a heartfelt statement on my part. That's how much I think of the man and his abilities. You and I have sat, across the interview table from men and women charged with some of the most vile crimes and mediocre crimes that you can imagine. Hundreds and hundreds of men and women charged with crimes. But I never sat across the interview table from a high-level KGB defector like Jeff Nyquist has on a number of occasions. Almost nobody's done that, Doug.
That's right.
Almost no one.
And I was thinking about that this weekend in preparation for today. I was thinking about our collective experience in criminal activity, not as perpetrators, but as investigators. You're exactly right. You know, who have we talked to for the majority of our professional life versus people like Jeff Nyquist and others like him? G. Edward Griffin comes to mind, that have interviewed these defectors and people who know what's going on, have talked to the people who know what's going on, I should say, or know the plan. So you're absolutely right. And by the way, folks, Jeff Nyquist is a regular guest on the Liberty Man's show, John Moore's show, thelibertyman.com. Listen to him every week right there. Go to thelibertyman.com. Make sure you bookmark that website and listen every day. So, okay, all right, John, go ahead. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Well, interruptions are not an issue, Doug. Our job, your job, my job, is to bring information to the table so our listeners will have research material that they can access to educate themselves and in turn educate others. That's my goal. I know you share that goal with me.
Yes.
You and I are broadcast journalists. My first semester in college, which was an absolute disaster in the fall of 1966, I wrote down in my very mature 19-year-old brain for the college people that I wanted to be a journalist. I was going to be a journalism major. Not really knowing what that meant, but it sounded like a great career to me. Now here I am, more than half a century later, I am, in fact, a broadcast journalist. As broadcast journalist, you and I, Doug, we search for verifiable truth so we can bring that verifiable truth to our listeners. That's your job. That's my job. That's why I'm here with you, and that's why we have these shows, is to bring verifiable truth to our audience. Verifiable truth that will stand up to scrutiny. Verifiable truth that is backed up by other independent sources that don't need each other. And you and I both learned as other investigators, Doug, when you find two or more witnesses that don't know each other saying the same thing, you're probably onto a pretty good deal there, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Yep. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So, and that's what I do also. I look for two or more sources that don't know each other that are saying essentially the same thing, not necessarily exactly the same thing, but essentially the same thing. And I was doing that during the Tet Offensive, the prelude to the Tet Offensive in 1967, and I'm doing it right now with this matter of the COVID situation and President Trump situation, looking for excellent sources that we know and we trust, not some unknown person who comes out of the blue that we don't know who they are. We don't know their reputation. We don't know if they're reliable or not. I avoid people like that in terms of what I give to my audience. I'll look at it and I'll read it and incorporate and everything else I'm doing, but I'm not going to use it as part of the public information I give to the public, because I can't stand behind it, Doug. I put out information that I can stand behind. And if it's not something I can stand behind, I make it clear that this information is from a source that's not known to be reliable, but it has the ring of truth, and it also comports and it goes along with similar information from reliable sources. That gives it stature as well. We were trained in military intelligence, Doug, to rate intelligence two ways. One, by the veracity of the source, and the second, of the veracity of the intelligence itself.
That's
and I can
true.
Give a couple.
Okay.
And I can give a couple of examples. If a four-star general says that the communists are have a base, the communist Chinese have a base in Mexico, the source would be given a 10, and the information would be given a 10. If a homeless person who has issues with drugs says the same thing, the source would be given a 1, and the information may be given a 5 or a 6, and only be given a 5 or 6 because we have other information from other reliable sources. Now, if a four-star general says that President Biden's having lunch on the White House lawn with aliens from Mars, well, the source would be given a 10, but the information would be given a 1. You see the point?
That's a very, very, very good explanation. And folks, if you've ever testified in court, if you've ever been embarrassed in court, that happens, if that's your profession, to provide, happens once, unless you're a real numbskull. It happens only one time, and you learn your lesson very quickly, if that's the case. So you're exactly right on the source and the credibility of information. I got to ask you about this because, again, from your capacity as a homicide investigator, and I respect that, this is kind of out of left field here, but I want to bring this up and get your take on this. Christopher Sines, all right, does that name ring a bell to you?
Negative.
Okay,
nope.
All right. Christopher Sine, S-I-G-N, like, you know, street sign, Christopher Sine. Folks, commit, you know, remember that and look this up. All right. So remember in 2016, the tarmac deal? That's right, 2016, the tarmac meeting between Bill Clinton and Loretta Lynch. Remember that?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. They talked about their grandchildren, right?
Right, right. Yeah. So
exactly.
It was like a shock that, you know, who was behind? I mean, the media was somebody in the media. Sharp eye got this. Holy cow. Well, the person who did this, who was able to get that, you know, the footage and the information, was Christopher Sine.
Okay, good.
All right. So that's by way of introduction. That's who Christopher Sine is. And he's been a broadcast journalist and such for quite a while. All right. So he wrote a book just very recently titled Secret on the Tarmac, Secret on the Tarmac. And he did an interview just several days ago on Fox about his book, detailed saying that, hey, it's got new information about the 2016 tarmac meeting. All right. That kind of brings everyone up to speed. Well, guess what? Saturday morning, he was found dead in his house. Dead. Not alive. Dead. Young guy. I mean, compared to you and me, young guy. Left a wife and children. But before he died, he was talking about, after he exposed this tarmac meeting, he said this: my wife, my family, we received significant death threats shortly after breaking this story. His credit cards were hacked. My children, we have code words. We have secret code words so that they know what to do and they know what the code words mean. On and on and on and on. Okay. So good health, but they're saying that he committed suicide. Now, here's my question again, as a homicide detective. I got some friends, at least one or two, okay? I don't know anybody, John, do you, that's had more friends who committed suicide than Bill and Hillary Clinton? I'm just asking. I mean, I don't know.
Was he shot twice in the back of the head?
They're not saying exactly.
They're not saying the cause of death.
No, no. Now, I don't know. Look, okay, I know stuff happens. I do. But my goodness, just saying, I don't know.
Well, the grieving widow is, if she makes a public statement, of course, she may be scared of retaliation herself. But and of course we've got the coroner of whatever county this took place in, the sheriff or police department will be investigating this and probably already have. It's people do commit suicide on one hand. On the other, the circumstances are certainly suspicious. And there's a long line. There are people who keep track of how many bodies follow the Clintons through the decades of people who had inside knowledge of the Clinton behavior and so forth that were found dead, allegedly from suicide. It's a long, tragic list, Doug. It may be in excess of 100. Is it more than 100 people? I don't know.
I've seen the list, and I think 112 and growing. But again, Christopher Sine, 45 years old, had a wife, Laura, three children, happy life, happy everything, or so it seems. And you know how, I mean, we don't know the inside stuff, but for him to experience all of those issues. And again, as a homicide detective, you know, going there and like being a detective, we'll say, going to the scene. And, you know, I would have to say, let's treat this as a homicide. Well, of course, anyone that's passed away, unless there's extensive medical records and such, but any unattended death you have to treat as a homicide, except if your name's Scalia. Then of course, you know, but,
right.
Yeah. So, okay. I just wanted to bring that out and just tell you about that. I was on my mind.
I heard that story earlier, and it's a disturbing story to say the least. And, it's also, unfortunately consistent with other men and women who, had knowledge of the Clintons' activities that, ended up dead. Very, very disturbing material. Yeah.
So the bigger picture of things and the way you started out today, I've been thinking about this too, because we're headed for something really bad on the event horizon. I really believe that. And I believe that, this could be engineered by the left. So back to your original statement. Let's operate on the premise that President Trump gets back in office, and this was the plan all along by the left, by the globalists. My question to you is, would President Trump be part of this? Or just,
I don't believe he's
okay.
Knowingly a part of it. And whether this whole event was planned out from the very beginning to have the outcome that's happened, I think is almost irrelevant. It'd be interesting to know. It'd be historical, of course, to have these facts laid out. Whether it was planned in advance or the powers that be, the communist Chinese, are taking advantage of the situation to gain the advantage that they want to gain and achieve the goals they want to change. Either one is plausible. Either one is certainly possible. And I don't think it really matters. This freight train is coming at us downhill with no brakes. Whether it's blue or red doesn't matter. The fact is it's coming. It's going to smash us. We don't jump off the tracks. So the nuances of how it came about is interesting and fascinating. But the main theme, the main topic, is that this train is coming at us, and it's going to be, in my opinion, maximum chaos in these blue cities and in these blue states. That's what's coming at us, Doug, and I don't see any way around it at the moment.
You know, I don't either, and boy, I've got a lot of questions. I don't see any way out of. I don't see any way to stop. stop what's coming. I mean, obviously, folks, we need to stay in prayer and pray for our country. You know, we need to do that. So, and just pray, because if anything could possibly stop this, it would be prayer. Because I don't think any human action could stop what is coming. And I think this is, again, this is a global situation. This is bigger than anyone could possibly really imagine. And you know, John, I'm the more people I talk to, like on the streets, they know something's amiss, but they don't really, they're not as informed as they should be, in my view anyway. Do you think that's, I mean, that's always the case, I guess, right?
It's always the case.
Okay.
People don't read. People get whatever little news they get from mainstream media, which isn't much. It's typically between 30 and 60 seconds on any given topic, delivered at a third grade level. And there's about 5% of the adults in this country that are literate, actually read books, actually read articles in anything beyond the headlines. It's a small percentage, but you're looking at several million men and women who are, in fact, knowledgeable. And these are the ones who contact their congressmen. These are the ones who contact their senators. These are the ones who actually write letters and influence other people. That 5% of Americans who are both literate and do pay attention to what's really going on, as opposed to having a very passing, cursory knowledge of what's really going on, Doug. And that's my reality. How about you?
Well, you know what I'm seeing? Okay, so speaking of that, all right, so there are people that are out there taking action. And one of the arenas or venues that people are taking action that I've seen, of course, Ted and Austin Brower. I don't know whether you saw the video clip of Ted speaking at the Polk County School Board, but I've been seeing a lot of people attending school board meetings. I mean, we saw that that one school board meeting. They ran out the doors, shut everything down. I mean, and the people took over. That brings a smile to my face because that is really the action of our forefathers, in my belief. I believe that that's what they would do. They would take back what was lost to this tyranny. And there was a Chandler, Arizona school board meeting, which I saw. There was an arrest made there of somebody that was, the Patriot movement, the head of the Patriot Party movement of Arizona was arrested for speaking out against the limitations of the venue and such. But the fact is, I guess.
What was the charge, Doug? What was he charged with?
I don't know. Opening his mouth. I've got a video if you want.
Well, it's not a crime.
Well, okay. Yeah, you know what? It's just a video of him being arrested, but it's not a crime. But you know, we're allowing these police, and in some cases, look, the police, they say, well, we're just following the orders of the people. You know, baloney, man. You don't do that. You don't act like a tyrant. And look, I'm all for law and order. I'm pro police, but doggone it, you don't do that if you're a police officer. You uphold the Constitution and you're oath to the Constitution. But yeah, the charge was, I think the charge was, disorderly conduct. Or possibly trespass, because right before his arrest, a woman from the Chandler, Arizona, this woman that represented the Chandler, Arizona school board came out and said, I want this man to leave, or we want you to leave. He didn't leave because he said, look, this is public property. And, you know, he didn't say this, but my tax dollars pay for this. And within like 2 minutes, he was in handcuffs. But we're seeing this more and more and more and more and more. But the other part of that too is no one there blocked the police from, you know, no one there like BLM would or Antifa would, you know, stood in front of the police saying, you can't take them away. They'd back down. I really believe the police would back down if, because there were like 50 people there. So if all 50 said, or at least 30 said, no, you're not taking him away. This is public property. And if they stood in the way and said, no, you're not going to do this, it might get a little tense, but I don't know. I would do that. I would stand in the way. I would say no. I mean, I respect you as a police officer, but don't do this. I don't know. What do you think, man?
Well,
I mean, I know you don't know all the details, but I mean, I get it. But nor do I. I don't know if this guy smacked somebody in the mouth. Well, I don't think. There was like 30 minutes before that, a two-minute video. But
these people, if they I'm just trying to look at the setting here. If the people running the meeting had rented the venue and it was their premises for that day, and police were on the scene, anybody who would disrupt the proceedings would be disorderly and would be subject to arrest, I would think, if the people who ran the show wanted that person arrested for disorderly conduct. I can see that happening.
Right. Now we're splitting hairs here. This is a school board. It's my understanding. This is a township
school board meeting.
It's a township building in a public venue paid for by the United States, or by the citizens of that town's tax dollars. And,
so is every courtroom in the United States, Doug.
Well,
if you're out of order in front of the judge, you will be arrested. You know that.
99.9% of the times, unless you throw a TV and then run. I'm kidding. No, I'm not kidding. Actually, that's true. But okay. But what I'm saying is if you publicize what the Chandler School Board did was publicize and, you know, through media, a school board meeting, a public meeting. They publicize this open public meeting on whatever date. Well, it was last Wednesday. We're going to have it at whatever time it was, and public invited. So the public goes there, and consistent with a lot of school boards across the country, because they're afraid, because there's more of us than there are of them. They lock the venue and only let certain people in at a time, like, you know, 10 people or 20 people, because of social distancing and capacity rules.
Right.
The arbitrary BS stuff. Okay. So, I mean, I've got the video, but I can explain it. The answer was, well, you know what? We're not disallowing anybody from coming in. You can sign up and ask your questions. You can sign up to ask questions. So we'll call the people who are on the list. Which really, that's sketchy. That's sketchy in my book. Okay. But hold on. Because here's the other part of this. Where was I going with that? Except to say, it limits the public's ability, right? I mean, it limits the public's ability to take part in important matters. And they were talking about CRT, critical race theory, and the coronavirus policies and such. But critical race theory was on the, I mean, a very, very volatile subject was on the docket. So anyway, I guess my point is this. The only way that they can stop us, or the only way they can stop us, is to physically stop us. But if we disallow that and show up in force and based on our numbers, like they did in the other place in Arizona, we can take back, and the local take backs are critically important, I believe, in order for us to really recapture our country. We'd have to take back the DA's offices, the 39 that Soros put in or funded by Soros. We got to take back our country, school board by school board, council meeting or council, by council, mayor by mayor, and so on, right? I mean, we've got to do it that way.
The opposition has been doing that for decades.
Yeah.
At every level. Getting people elected to school boards, getting people elected to city council, being state rep, state senator. And they've had a lot of success in some of these venues. And it's obvious the ones, California, Oregon, Washington State, and others. And it's time for us to push back and do the same thing. Have our people elected to school boards, to city councils, for committeemen, committeewomen, and so forth. I don't know if there's time to do it, but it's a worthwhile effort. And if we succeed, it's great. If we don't, well, it we're no worse off, are we?
No. And you know what? And I get your point about, I don't know if there's time to do it, but what else would we be doing in the meantime?
Exactly.
You know, I mean, Look, I know that I know people work, I know people have jobs, but frankly, I'm willing to make that sacrifice to put everything I have. It's a lot to me. It's probably relatively little to other people, but, everything I've got, I'm willing to put on the line and say, you know what? I'm going to go out there and fight the battle. Whether it's a real battle or whether it's a political battle or whether it's a, visual battle, you know, a battle of perception, info battle, information battle. And I think we're heavily into that. But, anyway, yeah, so, I'm reeling from what you said about Biden not being there. And I kind of believe that. You saw the video of him wandering around, and boy, if you heard, his speech at the G7, he mixed up Libya and Syria three different times. I mean,
really?
Yeah. Oh, he was just an absolute
mess. That's very humiliating. Right.
And the way he delivered it. In fact, I'll show it to you. You got that handy? Biden's a hot mess. I'll show it to you because it's really, folks, you need to see this. And it goes to John's point about, at the beginning about everything, really. It's like a minute and 30 or something. All right. Because it's on the, let me just make sure this is it. It's on, number, just taking care of business here, folks. Talk amongst yourselves. Let's see here. It's on. Okay, go ahead.
We could work together with Russia. For example, in Libya, we should be opening up the passes to be able to go through and provide food assistance and economic assistance. I mean, vital assistance to a population that's in real trouble. I think I'm going to try very much hard to, it is, and by the way, there's places where I shouldn't be starting off and negotiating in public here, but let me say it this way. Russia has engaged in activities which are, we believe, are contrary to international norms, but they have also bitten off some real problems they're going to have trouble chewing on. And, for example, the rebuilding of Syria, of Libya, of, you know, this is, they're there. And as long as they're there without the ability to bring about some order in the region, and you can't do that very well without providing for the basic economic needs of people. So I'm hopeful that we can find an accommodation that where we can save the lives of people in, for example, in Libya,
There you go. Nice, huh? What do you think?
It's pitiful. It's humiliating. It's embarrassing to have a man whose cognitive ability is, whatever he had, is come and gone. I'm not sure. I've heard that he was referred to 40 years ago as being the least intelligent U.S. senator, and he obviously hasn't gotten any more brilliant over the years.
Just richer. Sorry.
Yeah. It's a shame.
Yeah.
It's a shame. And the communist Chinese control this man. They own his Vice President Kamala Heels up Harris, and they've achieved their goal, at least for the time being. We need to reverse that. The communists have achieved their goal of taking control of the White House. They had it for 8 years with Obama, and they got it back right now, they think. Hopefully, the prognostications of these four people that I mentioned earlier, Cliff High, Mike Lindell, Sidney Powell, and Steve Bannon will all come to pass. It's going to be a wild ride, Doug. There's no doubt about that. It will be a wild ride.
So do you think that – what do you think about the Southern District in New York and also New York's AG, Letitia James, and other politicians who are in prosecutorial arenas, including the grand jury up there in New York? Do you think this is why they're – I mean, is this part of the reason why they want to indict President Trump, which would be unprecedented. But, I mean, they're working hard to indict President Trump. And they've been doing that since 2016. But
that's going to fail.
You think?
That's going to fail. Yeah, that's going to fail. It will. Every attempt to do that for years now, we're into the fifth year of them attempting to indict President Trump for all the make-believe things that have come up, collusion with the Russians. The man was impeached twice, and it serves to throw disparaging things at the president on one hand. On the other, it accomplishes nothing in terms of anything real. And this won't either, Doug. It'll be a failure. This president is smarter than they are, and they haven't figured it out yet, but I don't know that they ever will. But these efforts to hurt the president, they will fail.
Well, I certainly hope that's the case, because I know that if you have the attorney general of a state in your life for any reason, it gets a little bit, you know, look, it's a hassle. And especially if you got the Department of Justice, which is compromised, you've got the FBI, you got all the intelligence agencies, you know, it's just a big fight. So, but I hope it will fail, and I believe it will. And I think people see this for what it is. But speaking of chaos, can you imagine that? Can you imagine a grand jury or even an attorney general, state or federal, issuing an indictment for the arrest of President Trump? Number one,
I don't see that.
In the hell would do that? Who would execute that arrest warrant? That's what I want to know. Can you imagine? Can you picture that in your head going down? Like, you know, the Roger Stone treatment at 6 a.m. in Mar-a-Lago, or wherever he might be, Bedminster. That call. I volunteer for that duty. I'll go in and, arrest, I don't know. It's just, wow. All right. I just envisioning this in my head, and I'm thinking, you want a riot. You want a war. Oh boy. That would be something. All right. We've got about 8 minutes left, John, and I know that I did the majority of talking and showing clips. So, anything else on your radar that we should talk about? I know we talk about preps and stuff. I think people have that. Look, it's not too late, but get going with preparations. And folks, some good stuff on thelibertyman.com. Go there, read through it, the news and the products and such. Support John Moore, thelibertyman.com. But anything else on your radar, the event horizon that we see?
Other than talks we talk about, the economy, of course, is, I heard a statement the other day that, 70% of all the money ever issued by the U.S. Treasury has been issued in the last few years. And it seems to be accelerating. So, we need to prepare for, the financial hard times ahead, which we're already at the beginning of. The inflation may become runaway inflation. I don't believe it's going to become Zimbabwe, but it'll be uncomfortable. And people might be well advised to have a second stream or even a third stream of income to deal with what's coming at us, Doug. That might be a wise thing for many people. Food right now is not going to get any cheaper. Long-term storage food, canned food, freeze-dried food, frozen food is a wise investment right now because it's just going to get more expensive, Doug.
Yeah.
And I'm personally, this week, I'll be storing up just 15 gallons of extra fuel for my car in case I need it. I'll put a good quality stabilizer in it, and it'll be kept in a good, secure location out of the direct sunlight so that it'll keep for many, many months and be right there for when I need it. And I encourage people to do the same. My prepper tip today was to store food, fuel, water, ammunition, and medications. All things that right now are easy to get. They may be expensive, but there's no issues with supply or transportation at the moment. That could change in a heartbeat, Doug, and I encourage people to go ahead and do these things, to stock up now while the prices are less expensive, And maybe things like building material. Maybe you might think you want plywood to cover your windows in case of a hurricane. Now, it's not going to get any cheaper, at least not for the foreseeable future. So stocking up on that plywood now would be a wise thing, wouldn't it, Doug?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, for something like that, now I wouldn't voluntarily go and say, let's have a house built, you know, and pay the lumber prices. Now, however, I might. It depends, but ordinarily, I don't think I would do that. That's just me. At the Extinction Protocols conference this past weekend, that Steve Quayle had virtual conference, he had an economist on who said, "You know what? It's bad." And to what you said about the money supply, I mean, I think it's even right. Worse. I think it's like within the last year. 11 months, something like that, with respect to the money, in circulation, or the debt, I should say, tripling or exponentially rising. It was just incredible. Just to see the charts would make you, just want to take your money out of the bank and put it in something, you know, like a valuable asset, like either precious metals or land or something. I don't know, but, certainly not keeping the bank. I don't know. But it's just crazy. Yeah, we've got a lot of hurt coming our way. We really do.
We do. We do. We have a world of hurt coming our way. Those that are prepared in advance will do much better. Those who aren't prepared in advance will have more difficulties. And I've seen this in my life over and over. I've seen it happen worldwide over and over. And it's just prudent to make these preparations in advance while it's relatively simple and less expensive to do so. And you'll be very glad that you did. It'll give you peace of mind. Peace of mind has a lot of value, doesn't it, Doug?
You know something, the biggest, yes, it does. And I think the biggest enemy of really accepting the truth, and those are intentional. I said that intentionally, accepting the truth or being able to identify and say, wow, this is really happening, is fear. Absolute fear. Fear is paralyzing, and fear's got no place for you folks today. I mean, none. So that's right. You're right. And I think what you said, the reason a lot of people don't prepare is, or take action is fear. And fear is a lot of times unwarranted. So.
A lot of times it is.
Yeah.
And, some people are more fearful than others. People's fears vary, and that's just part of being human. And that's okay. It's okay to have different fears and different levels of fear. But, the basics of food, fuel, water, ammunition and medications are basic for everybody. It's not unique to any individual, race, age. Those things are all relevant and all basic for everybody. Now, you may not have a motor vehicle, so fuel may not be much of an issue, especially up in the extreme Northeast. People can live their whole lives, never own an automobile. But for most of the country, well, that's true.
Yeah, you know, it is.
Yeah. But do what you gotta do for yourself. And, pay heed to what, Doug and I are saying. Do your own independent research. Come to your own independent conclusions. There's a high likelihood you'll come to the same conclusion that Doug and I have. A high likelihood. If you're a free thinker, you don't get caught up in the emotions of challenging our day-to-day life. And that's what you and I, Doug, we're doing, is challenging the possibility that our day-to-day normal life, the new normal since COVID, could go away in a heartbeat, aren't we, Doug?
Absolutely. Yes, John, and normal, really, the word normal, it doesn't exist anymore. It's been replaced by things, it's abnormal in all respects, and shortages, the lack of selection, and of course, so some hard times coming, so prepare accordingly. John Moore, thelibertyman.com. We are out of time. I want to say thank you so much for everything you do. John, God bless you, my friend.
Well, thank you, Doug. It's always fun to visit with you and get caught up, and we'll do it again next Monday. Oh, wait. I need next Monday off. I got a family event. Can I have next Monday off?
No check for you. No, I'm kidding. There's no, there are folks out there. No.
I'm gonna visit my daughter. It's something I don't get to do very often.
I'm glad you are. And yep. Give her a nice hug and say that we're thinking about her and praying.
I will. All right. I will. Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. God bless you, John Moore, thelibertyman.com. Folks, visit his website. And speaking of time off, Wednesday and Thursday, folks, we're working some active investigations. Okay. I'm going to tell you that. Wednesday and Thursday, I'm not going to have regular shows. I hope to be able to do something, maybe from the office, because we are going to be very busy. And, hopefully you'll hear about, the results of that later. With that, am I on time? Eric the Tech, am I on time? Yeah. All right. He always yells at me. I always get yelled at, and then he beats me. No, he doesn't beat me. All right, folks. Thanks again for purchasing In the Dark of Night, and thanks for supporting us, and thanks for being there. May God bless each and every one of you. Have a good night.